This is VOA News via remote. I'm Tommy McNeil. U.S. President Donald Trump on Sunday extended his stay-at-home guidelines until the end of April, dropping a hotly criticized plan to get the economy up and running by mid-April, after a top medical advisor said more than 100,000 Americans could die from the coronavirus outbreak. The reversal by Mr. Trump, which he said would be disclosed in greater detail Tuesday, came as the U.S. death toll has topped more than 2,400 from the respiratory disease. Earlier on Sunday, Dr. Anthony Fauci, director of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases, told CNN that the pandemic could ultimately kill between 100,000 and 200,000 people in the United States if mitigation was not successful. Mainland China reported a drop in new coronavirus cases for the fourth consecutive day on Sunday as Beijing seeks to stamp out the risk of a second wave of infections by shutting its borders to foreign travelers and cutting international flights. The National Health Commission said in a statement Monday that 31 new coronavirus cases were recorded Sunday, including one locally transmitted infection, dropping from 45 cases a day earlier. Four new deaths were reported, taking the cumulative death toll from the coronavirus outbreak in the mainland to 3,304. British Prime Minister Boris Johnson thanked the public and all essential workers for their help during the coronavirus crisis. In a video posted on social media Sunday, Johnson, who is self-isolating in Downing Street, thanked NHS staff, returning staff, pharmacists, essential workers, and the volunteers for all their hard work. He said, "We are going to do it. We are going to do it together. So thank you to all of you. And remember, stay at home, protect our NHS, and save lives." This is VOA News. A limited emergency use authorization for two anti-malarial drugs touted as game changers by U.S. President Donald Trump has been issued by the U.S. Food and Drug Administration to treat coronavirus patients. In a statement published Sunday, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services detailed recent donations of medicine and a national stockpile, including the two drugs, both being investigated as potential COVID-19 treatments. It said the FDA had allowed them to be distributed and prescribed by doctors to hospitalized teen and adult patients with COVID-19 as appropriate when a clinical trial is not available or feasible. Mr. Trump said last week the two drugs could be a gift from God, despite scientists warning against the dangers of overhyping unproven treatments. Many researchers, including Anthony Fauci, the United States' leading infectious disease expert, have urged the public to remain cautious until larger clinical trials validate smaller studies. The Panama Canal Authority says two cruise ships carrying more than 1,800 passengers and crew stranded off the Central American country and hoping to reach port of Florida had begun the process of transiting the canal. The announcement came Sunday after the passengers of the Zaandam and Rotterdam received mixed signals. While Panamanian officials said that they would let the ships transit the canal, the cruise company said it had not been given permission, and Fort Lauderdale's mayor said he did not want the ship to dock near his city, at least without extensive precautions. Four people aboard it had died, and at least two had tested positive for COVID-19. During an interview Sunday, Venezuelan opposition leader Juan Guaido said Venezuela should form an emergency government made up of the opposition and some members of the ruling Socialist Party to receive foreign aid needed to confront the coronavirus outbreak. The president, Nicolas Maduro, has been broadly discredited among Western nations after his disputed 2018 re-election, leaving new foreign financiers willing to provide funds to improve the healthcare system decimated by years of economic crisis. Guaido, who has been recognized by more than 50 nations, including the United States, as the country's rightful president, said a coalition government would be able to convince multilateral agencies to provide $1.2 billion in financing to address the outbreak. The emergency government would not include Maduro or other top allies, he said, a group of whom were indicted by the U.S. Department of Justice on Thursday on accusations of narco-terrorism. He declined to reveal the names of potential participants. Maduro has dismissed Guaido as a puppet of the United States and in the past has rebuffed calls to step aside. Via remote, I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Botte in Washington. Today is Monday, March 30th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Mali held parliamentary elections on Sunday amid coronavirus pandemic fears.
People were asked first to wash their hands with soap before entering the voting precinct. Once in the precinct, you are offered hand sanitizer before touching anything.
Yaa Samaki is the parliamentary candidate in Mali's largest electoral district of Kati. Kenya's coronavirus cases rise to 42. Gambia declares a coronavirus state of emergency, and the former leader of Uganda's main opposition, FDC, welcomes a court ruling striking down the country's notorious Public Water Management Act.
It is welcome because it takes away the cover of the regime in its abuse of human rights. It's a tool for regime survival.
The Guinean government refused opposition allegations of murder in the town of Nzere-Kore, and the opposition says it will never recognize the results of the March 22 referendum. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley Sports are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Mali voted Sunday in parliamentary elections amid jihadist insecurity and coronavirus pandemic fears. Yaa Samaki, candidate in Mali's largest electoral district of Kati, says the government took all coronavirus prevention steps to protect the voters.
People are trickling in to vote for their representatives. Of course, in the wake of the coronavirus pandemic, people have not come out in as great a number as they used to, because many people have been using the feud tactic to keep voters at home. Nevertheless, I think that we'll reach at least a 20-30% participation rate.
The government had promised to provide additional hygiene measures to protect voters. Did this happen?
I personally voted this morning, and I have observed that the hygiene measures that the government has promised were actually offered on each of the voting precincts. People were asked first to wash their hands with soap before entering the voting precincts. Once in the precincts, you are offered hand sanitizer before touching anything. And then you are given your ballot and you vote. And on your way out, you are also offered the hand sanitizer. So government has followed through on its promise to provide hygiene measures to all of the voting precincts.
The government went ahead to have these elections because it said it wants the new parliament to fight against insecurity. Do you think this was a wise decision to have the elections?
James, it was a wise decision on the part of the government of Mali to go ahead with holding the elections, even in the face of the coronavirus epidemic. It is important for Mali to preserve our institutional arrangements. The parliament has been term limited for a little over a year now, and there is a need to offer the people of Mali representation. So this election was an opportunity for people to vote and renew the parliament, and I do believe it was a good decision. And also, there is no indication that holding this election will contribute in a significant measure to the spread of the coronavirus. In Mali right now, we have fewer than 20 cases confirmed. So if we continue the containment measures, if we continue to follow the hygiene measures, I believe that we will be able to contain the spread of the disease.
Yaa Samaki is a parliamentary candidate in Mali's largest electoral district of Kati. You're speaking with us from the capital, Bamako. A Kenyan nurse working in Rome, Italy, has called on fellow Kenyans to treat the COVID-19 pandemic with a lot of seriousness. As Maureen Ojiambo reports from Nairobi, the warning comes as the number of coronavirus cases in Kenya rose to 42.
Kenya has already recorded its first death case of a patient who was suffering from diabetes and recently traveled from Swaziland via South Africa as the number of infected patients rise to 42. Mary Mwangi, a Kenyan nurse working in Rome, Italy, said that Italy started on a lower rate, but the situation is unbearable, urging Kenyans to adhere to the rules set by the government to avoid the crisis.
My biggest fear is how the news are being received in Kenya, because some people are really joking on it. Maybe they are not seeing how serious it is. I would say that Italy has one of the best medical care, but the situation is really getting out of hand, hoping that it will get fixed as fast as possible, that is.
Being in the medical industry, she says most of her colleagues have been infected by the virus and even lost lives.
I'll tell you that we've got fear within ourselves. But what is happening here, if you are a doctor and you had a contact, they are putting you on a quarantine for 21 days, unlike the 14 days that's known well. The problem is that sincerely, when one medical personnel is infected, it becomes to a threat to the whole world or even to the whole hospital. So it's very, very serious.
Kenya's health ministry says more than 2,000 people who arrived in the country from Monday to Wednesday last week have been placed under mandatory quarantine. Speaking in Nairobi yesterday Sunday, Health Cabinet Secretary Mutahi Kagwe said that as per yesterday Sunday, Kenya had 42 COVID-19 positive cases.
We have received confirmation that 4 people have tested positive for the disease. They include 1 Kenyan and 3 foreigners from America, Cameroon, and Burkina Faso. This now brings to 42 the number of those who have tested positive for the virus in Kenya.
The Kenyan dusk to dawn curfew still ongoing since Friday last week as Kenyans struggle to beat the curfew time, especially those in busy cities. Mr. Kagwe says employers who will not release the workers on time should provide accommodation for them.
I want to urge employers to kindly release their employees in time to be able to meet the curfew time of 7 p.m. If they do not want to allow their employees to leave on time, then they should prepare accommodation for them.
Nairobi remains the epicenter of the virus, leading with 31 cases, followed by the coastal region counties. Reporting for VOA's Daybreak Africa, I am Maureen Ojiambo in Nairobi, Kenya.
Gambian President Adamman Barrow has declared a national emergency to combat the coronavirus pandemic. He has ordered all non-essential businesses closed and suspended all public gatherings. Pandere Umbai reports from Raleigh, North Carolina.
In a national state address on Friday, President Barrow outlined the decision behind his move to declare a state of emergency in the country.
In less than 2 weeks after my last address to the nation, the situation in the country has changed. As confirmed by the Ministry of Health, so far, more than 30 tests have been conducted. 3 have been positive, and 1 is still inconclusive. Only 1 person among the confirmed cases in the country passed away.
The president then reaffirmed his government's commitment in combating the coronavirus pandemic. This, he says, has been manifested by his government's efforts in reviewing and intensifying prevention measures in tackling the spread of the virus in the country.
We know with certainty that mass movement of people and public gatherings are threats to the containment of COVID-19. Therefore, in addition to the measures mentioned in my last address, decisions has been taken to impose new restrictions. To curtail our exposure to infection through close interactions, my government has taken the decisions to scale down government operations.
The president knows that the corona pandemic continues to pose what he called a grave concern both globally and nationally.
I have now signed a second proclamation declaring a state of public emergency throughout the Gambia. Under this proclamation, the following measures shall be enforced with effect from today, 27 March 2020. 1, all non-essential food outlets in all markets and enclosed shopping areas shall be closed.
The national shutdown has also affected entertainment outlets such as bars, cafeterias, cinemas, video clubs, and nightclubs. Barrow has also signed a presidential proclamation regulating commodity prices.
I have been informed that there are enough supplies of essential commodities for the immediate and medium-term needs of the country.
Barrow has also called on the public to report any person who has escaped from quarantine. This followed the recent escaping of some quarantine passengers. He warns that it is illegal for anyone to harbor suspects fleeing from quarantine. For VOA Daybreak Africa, this is Pandering by reporting from Raleigh, North Carolina.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Monday, March 30th. The former leader of Uganda's main opposition forum for democratic change, the FDC party, Dr. Kizza Besigye, says he welcomes last Friday's constitutional court ruling striking down a section of the Public Order Management Act. Police have used the act to prevent opponents of the government from holding political rallies. In its ruling, the court said the act violates parts of Uganda's constitution, such as freedom of assembly and association. Dr. Besigye says while there is a likelihood that President Museveni will appeal the ruling, it is, however, welcomed because it takes away the cover of the government in its abuse of human rights.
The ruling of the Constitutional Court to annul the obnoxious law known as Public Order Management Act in Uganda is still subject to a possible appeal in the Supreme Court. And I consider that it's highly likely that the NRM junta will indeed appeal to the Supreme Court. And even while the appeal is there, they could even seek a stay of execution. This was indeed a truly welcome and heartwarming ruling. I must say that I did not expect this ruling to come from our constitutional court, because the courts of law in Uganda, just like all the other institutions of state, have for some time been under total capture by the junta led by Yoweri Museveni. So this ruling was indeed a truly surprising one and most welcome. It is welcome because it takes away the cover of the regime in its abuse of human rights. The purpose of the abuse of rights, it's a tool for regime survival, because the purpose of the law was to restrict the basic rights of assembly, the right of association, the right of movement, the right of expression, the right of demonstration. All these basic political rights were curtailed under the Public Order Management Act. And the reason that these rights are curtailed is to undermine any form of organized political opposition in Uganda to cause change of government in Uganda.
Do you think, Dr. Besigye, that by the court striking down this law will mark the beginning of the return of real political democracy and also an end to the criminalization of political competition in Uganda?
I do not expect that the annulling of this law is going to change the attitude of the regime, that the annulling of this act will herald the return of democratic freedoms, but their actions will not have the cover of the law.
Dr. Kizza Besigye is the former leader of Uganda's main opposition forum for democratic change. You're speaking with us from the capital, Kampala. The Guinean government has refuted opposition allegations that more than 21 people were killed in Nzere-Kori during the March 22 controversial constitutional referendum and parliamentary elections. The denial came as the country's electoral commission last Friday announced the results, saying about 92% of ballots were in favor of adopting the new constitution, while 8% were against. The opposition National Front for the Defense of the Constitution, which opposed the referendum, says government militias made up of local hunters and a former rebel group during the Liberian Civil War carried out the killings. Information Minister Amara Sampare says the problem in Nzere-Kori is a result of an ongoing dispute between two ethnic groups.
The government deplored the fact that some people were killed, but we not agree with the number that have been announced by opposition leaders. Investigations are already started, and it is better for us to wait until we have results from those investigations to understand exactly what happened that day. But again, the government is very sorry for that. The government deplore it, and the government have addressed condolences to the families.
Mr. Minister, we are told by the opposition that your government has militias in the region. How true is it?
The Guinea government has no militia. I insist on it. No militia. That is rubbish. The things that are happening in Zerikore is a very, very old conflict that exists between two ethnic groups. The one is called Konya, and the second is called Gerze. And everything started because one old man were killed after, I think, he has been injured or beaten by some people. I don't exactly know what happened there. And after that old man died, I think it was Gerze or Konya, and that is the reason why the other community wanted to go for revenge. That's the story. There is no political thing inside. It is a old story based on the conflict that exists between those two communities.
Amara Sampare is Guinea's information minister. He was speaking with us from the capital, Conakry. In Guinea, the opposition National Front for the Defense of the Constitution, NFDC, said it does not and will never recognize the March 22 controversial constitutional referendum as legitimate. NFDC member Faya Milimuno also accused the government of responsibility for the deaths of more than 21 people in the town of Nzerikori during the March 22 constitutional referendum and parliamentary elections.
The situation in Nzerikori is very tough as we speak because many people have been killed over there, and everything is been manipulated by the power. And it is the power taking care of two group of militia in that area. Everybody remember the group called Ilimo during the war in Liberia. That Ilimo group is still alive in Nzerikore, in Masenta. And every time they've been manipulated by the government to perform killings of other people.
We spoke with the Minister of Information of Guinea, and he says that the situation in Nzerikore has nothing to do with government security. Instead, he said it is an issue of a dispute between two tribes in the region.
It is the government which have sent to the area the militia we call Donzo. Those are hunters. Traditionally, we have hunters in any single community here in Guinea. But those from Upper Guinea, Alpha Conde and his government are using those hunters as a militia, most of the time to perform killings that are ethnically oriented. And the FNDC has called for the international community to send investigators, because what is going on in Nzerikore, to establish the truth about it, we need an international investigation.
Now that the referendum is over, what is next now for the opposition?
First, FNDC doesn't recognize what happened on the 22nd to be considered as elections. So everything coming out of that process is not recognized. It's like what they call the so-called new constitution. We are going to abide by the constitution of May 7, 2010. And also the parliament, they want to install based on what happened on the 22nd. That parliament is not going to be recognized. So we are going to fight him until he and the extremists around him are removed from power.
Fayemi Muno is a member of the National Front for the Defense of the Constitution in Guinea. He was speaking with us from the capital, Conakry. It's time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. And here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Monday morning to you, Samson.
Good Monday morning to you, James. We begin the sports in Nigeria, where despite the cancellation or postponement of major sporting events within and outside the country, Nigeria Ministry of Youth and Sports Development says it will keep and honor all contracts with its athletes. Nigeria Minister of Youth and Sports, Sunday Dari, speaking to the media in Abuja, said the athletes can fall back on the funds made available by the Adapt an Athlete campaign to train and keep in shape at these trying times.
The Nigerian authority, through the sports ministry, called off the National Sports Festival. Several of our athletes overseas could not practice again because the sporting facilities were shut down. What we have done as a ministry and as a country is to be in touch with each one of them because we have a database to know what their plans are, to know what support they need. The Adopt an Athlete plan that we have, the funds are going to them. So we're happy that those funds can help them at this period when some of them cannot even make money from competitions. They're free to leverage on that. They can also look for indoor facilities where they can practice, they can pay to use those facilities. So there's a continuous engagement with our athletes.
He reaffirmed that the country will stick to taking part in other 11 sports when the Tokyo Olympic takes place at a rescheduled date next year.
Yes, we've agreed it'll be 11 sports. We're going to stick to that. A couple of qualifiers are still pending. Not all of them have completed their qualifiers, about 7 have completed their qualifiers. Funds are already approved. As soon as they can go for the qualifiers when there's a stem in the COVID-19 spread, they would definitely. Don't also forget that preparing for the Olympics is a continuum. The athletes must continue to practice.
Now to football news. Nigeria international and Manchester United striker Odion Ighalo's superb strike against Austria's Lask in the Europa League has won Manchester United's Match Goal of the Month award. The Nigerian's driven strike to open scoring for the Red Devils after an impressive ball juggling pulled 32% of votes. Ighalo beat off fierce competition from Scott McTominay's immemorable late goal against Manchester City and Bruno Fernandes' first strike against Everton. Ghana Football Association General Secretary Prosper Harrison Addo has stated that clubs will be given time to prepare their teams before the Premier League resumes after the coronavirus pandemic. The top flight is in the second week of a one-month suspension as part of the measures to curb the spread of the disease. Ghana legend and former Asante Kotoko star Okpoku Afria is dead. The 1978 African Cup of Nations winner died in Kumasi on Sunday, aged 75. And that's it on Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a very good day. And that's it for this Monday, March 30th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Shryak, as well as post editor Samson O'Malley, along with all of our engineers. I'm James Butte in Washington, hoping you have a very productive week.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African Beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bobo music to hip life, bongo flavor to soukous, Afrobeat to dumbolo and makossa to kwaito. The African Beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC, right after the international news.
Hello, Africa. This is Peter Clotty, host of VOA's Africa Weekend Show, Nightline Africa. Tune in. You will be glad you did.
Nightline Africa is a fast-paced, tightly edited news show designed to keep our listeners engaged from beginning to end. Nightline comes to you live from the Voice of America on the following shortwave frequencies: 6080 kilohertz, 49.3 meter band, and 15580 kilohertz, 19.2 meter band.